Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association, real education for people who believe in real food. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
Hi, this is Celia Cutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn, on a chilly March afternoon. Thank you so much for listening and giving me a half an hour of your time. Joining me in the studio is my dear friend and world traveler, Allison Hamlin. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Emily.
Just before we went on the air, Allison was sharing photographs from her yoga retreat in Colombia that she just went on.
Yeah.
She's doing it again.
I'm sorry. You can't see any of them, but it was great.
So you booked this trip about 9 months ago, and you were kind of nervous about it at the time because you felt like, I booked a trip to Colombia. What have I just done?
Yeah. Well, I booked it at a point in my summer, I think, in my life where I was just like, I need something, but I don't know what it is. Like when you're hungry, but you don't know what you want to eat, and you're not sure you're hungry yet. But I just did it on a whim, which is super unlike me.
I've known you for a long time.
Yeah.
It's very unlike in a good way. Like, you're very, like, this is what I'm going to do. You're very, like, plan-oriented, and you execute a plan, and then you're happy because things went according to plan.
Yes, I like to manage my own expectations. But I go to this amazing studio in Williamsburg called Sync Studio, and they had sent out this email. They were like, oh, it's our first retreat. We are going to Colombia. And you should come. And my friend Talia sent it to me, and she was like, crazy idea, should we go? And I was like, maybe, I guess, sort
of. And you guys are both single ladies.
Well, I wasn't at the time, but.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I forgot. Sorry. But you are relatively unattached.
yeah, as of now, yes.
You were a coupled lady at the time. Talia was coupled at the time?
No, Talia was single. But fun story, I was at my partner's sister's wedding at the time. So we were in Charleston. His sister was about to get married. He was about to leave on a month-long road trip across the country.
I remember this well.
He was mad at me because I told him that I couldn't take the time off from work. And then I turned around and booked a week-long vacation to Colombia. So I was a little bit in the doghouse, but I kind of was like, I'm doing this one for me. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to close my eyes and jump. So I put my deposit down, and then I kind of forgot about it. Like they like kind of sent us a couple of reminders like, hey, by the way, the rest of your money is due. Don't forget. Like you gotta pay us if you want to come. And, yeah, and a lot of my life has changed, obviously, between now and then. And weirdly, I don't think I was the only one. I think that was a story I heard a lot with people on this trip was, you know, either, you know, their life had changed significantly. They were, like, looking to come or go from the city. They were entering or exiting relationships. They were looking for new jobs. They were leaving old jobs. So it really seemed like it ended up being this focal point for a lot of people's energy and transition. And I thought a lot about the idea of, like, retreat. And, like, I think it can mean two things. One, it can mean, obviously, to get away. So retreat, like, take a step back, to retreat physically or mentally. But we also played around with the idea of, like, retreat. Like, treat yourself. Like, bring joy and light into your life and think about what you need. And I bought before I left this really, like, very kind of, like, hippie spiritual book.
You're in a safe place.
Yeah. Well, I got like really into, I was looking for books and I stumbled upon this book at this Williamsburg bookshop called Be Here Now by Baba Ram Dass. So his whole story is that he was like a professor at Harvard with Timothy Leary and did a whole bunch of LSD and had all of these like mind expanding experiences. And then he was like, this isn't satisfying me anymore. I need to go deeper, and journeyed all through Asia and Southeast Asia, and ended up in India following this guy into the mountains, and they had this yoga retreat, and he had this like newfound spirituality. So the whole book, I mean, you should look it up on the internet. It is one of the craziest books I've ever seen. There are all of these woodblock prints in the middle of the book about his like, they're sort of like psychedelic yogic meditations. Maybe Emily can
I'm gonna look it up later.
It was like really amazing, and because it's not a super dense book, it leaves you a lot to think about. But basically what I took out of it was that this was time for me to do me, which is the thing, it's really hard to do in New York because you're just constantly bombarded by so many things that are on your mind, that people are emailing you or texting you, and you're just so overwhelmed by all of the stimulation that you forget to take that space for yourself. So, you know, last week you were sort of, you know, or 2 weeks ago while I was here, you were talking about kind of making difficult decisions for yourself around your life habits. And I think that's really applicable even in this situation where I put my phone on airplane mode and I left it in my room all week. I didn't pick it up. I did not check my email.
Good for you.
I wasn't on social media. I posted a picture of myself on Snapchat at the airport saying, peace out, bitches.
I have just gone off the grid.
And I really like tried to, I know this sounds really hokey, but I really tried to be in every minute. And it was hard at first because your brain just wants to pull you away. So to make that space, you have to be, I mean, it's just, you have to be really intentional about it. And I would really, I mean, this was the first vacation I've taken in 5 years. And it scared me. I really was afraid to be gone for this long, but everybody's still here.
The studio is
still here, and you're still here, and everybody has just managed to go on. And so,
and you're better for it, right? I mean, like, are you bringing back some of that? I mean, was it relaxation? Was it connectivity and all of the things? Like, can you bring that back to work, or is it like sacred space and it's a different part?
Well, I think two things. One, what this taught me was that I have built up a lot of barriers to feeling vulnerable or just to feel anything. So whether that is being like, oh, I feel weird in this moment, I'm going to check my email, or I feel weird or I feel uncomfortable, so I have to be busy, or I have to, you know, being alone feels strange, so I'm going to reach out and just like text somebody. So I've really tried to be thoughtful about those moments and be like, oh, I'm waiting in line for the bathroom and there's someone standing next to me. I could just talk to them.
So not a New Yorker thing to do.
crazy. So feeling those feelings and recognizing them and putting them aside, which is also, I mean, not ironically, like a thing that I've been working with my therapist with a lot. So, you know, sometimes they say you have to hear something 7 times to like listen to it, and then over and over until it sinks in. But to your question about work, I think what I have noticed going through my inbox, 200 unanswered emails, is that I was just overthinking things so much. It was just like effort a little bit less, and trust people to know like what you need and be clear, but you don't have to solve the whole problem. You can say like, here's what I'm going to solve. This is what I can do. I want to help you, or I can't help you is even an okay answer, but to not let that get to the point where you're like so overwhelmed by all of the options and the possibilities that you let that fear of taking that first step stop you from taking any steps at all.
Yeah. When I was in the public teaching in the public school system, there was this like culture of watching people who did nothing would just get more nothing to do. And the people who worked really hard got more stuff to do. And there was this like real tension.
That's a restaurant thing too. I think, maybe we could talk about that later.
Yeah. Well, I think it's like, learning, and I have this great perspective in my students. We had a really great conversation today because a lot of them are about to graduate from undergraduate school. And so, and I've been there white knuckled, like, I need to know what I'm going to do like tomorrow. And I have to like remind, you know, and I'll say things to them that sound smart, like relax. And they're like, it's easy for you to say. And I'm like, yeah, I've got 15 years of experience on you. And what I learned is that white knuckling is not, doesn't make things easier. And mm-hmm. so to the idea, like the harder you work, the more work there is to do. There's something I think that comes with experience or something where it's like, you're kind of in charge of that. Mm-hmm. You know, like only people can only put onto you or prescribe to you so much where you can say, I'm not doing that. Whereas you and I both, I think, super ambitious, super, you know, smart and funny and all those wonderful things.
Oh, shucks.
But I think we really like gravitate towards problem solving. Let me fix that for you. Let me fix that for you. Mm-hmm. And then you can make yourself really crazy. Mm-hmm. And it takes something like retreating. God, I need to do that too. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I've been trying to do it on like little bits, like every day, mm-hmm. like going for a run or whatever. I took the dog for a walk in the woods yesterday.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about this trip that blew my mind was I spent every minute outside. So even sleeping, our bungalows were enclosed, but the bathroom was open. There was like a shower outside, like waterfall shower in the palm trees. And we were outside the whole time. And I realize how much of your life you spend in the city. I mean, just indoors, underground, out of the light, and never thinking about how important that connection is to yourself and to your natural surroundings. And I think one of the things I'm looking forward to now the weather is getting warmer is finding ways to be outside, and just realizing how happy that makes me. And I don't know if it's really true for everyone, but I think it just changes your brain chemistry enough where you're different.
When people, it's rare that I hear someone say, I don't like to be outside. But if I've heard that, it's like someone telling me like, they were super popular in high school. I'm like, that says something about a person.
They're like, are you a vampire? Right? Should I be worried?
Yeah, it's like, how outside is awesome. Like, what's not to like?
It's super, super awesome. And then eat, like, this is true of all things, but we were lucky and had this amazing chef who cooked us three, sometimes four meals a day with all of this fresh produce, fresh fish, fresh everything, fresh juices. We had juice with every meal. And I know this makes me sound like one of those obnoxious hippie yogis, but they're not all like they're not that blissed out for no reason. They really like I came back. Roberta's had a pop up at ISA, and I came back and took a class at the studio the day I came back, and then went and ate two pizzas. And I will tell you, there is a big difference from eating ceviche on the beach with a little bit of juice to scarfing down a whole pizza.
Yeah.
Those things are not the same.
Not the same. Yeah. And I think being mindful of that stuff, like what we consume, is so important. So I still have not had a drink. Mm-hmm. And I have sort of, you know, I'm being very mindful of like, what does this feel like? What am I feeling? Mm-hmm. And what I've realized is that with the exception of a 90-minute window, pretty much when I'm cooking dinner, mm-hmm. that's tough because I really miss having a glass of wine.
Right. Because that's your moment with the phone in the bathroom. Yeah. You're like, oh, I feel like there's an itch and I want to scratch it with a thing that feels comfortable for me.
Familiar, comfortable. It gives me... It's like my way of giving myself permission to like end my day. Like I'm not going to think anymore.
Oh,
like
that's
I'm
your transition done. Phase. Yeah.
And other than that, and I'm working with that and like just sitting with it and feeling that feeling of a little bit of anxiety and a little bit of like, oh, am I really never going to drink again? And like we said last week, I keep telling myself like, no, dummy, that's not how this, like, we're not, this isn't what we're doing. Everything else is better.
Yeah.
Everything else, 100% better. Mm-hmm. It's like that. Like, and now I didn't drink for a month and then I went back to drinking and now I'm not drinking. And it's like, no, it's everything's better without the drinking. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's like my little dietary retreat too. I feel like my body's working better. Food tastes better. I just feel Like, there's something about being able to get up at 4:30 in the morning without a problem. Like, just, I just get up. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, get on my day.
Yeah. So. Well, and too, I think you just, you hold yourself hostage to, people are bad long-term maximizers. They are pretty good at short term. So you're like, well, tomorrow I don't want to feel this way. But it's hard to know what you're going to feel like for the rest of your life, which is, again, that first step that people are afraid of taking. And I think is hard for people like us, and maybe people who are listening who can identify with this, about people who like to do things, because it's really easy to do an active thing, but it's really hard to refrain from doing a thing. And over a long time, you're like, I'm a doer, I do things, but not doing this thing is really much harder, it's perversely, than doing all the things that, like, in your mind, that's racing and trying to get ahead and do all the stuff. You can't check something off your list that you did not do.
Yeah, yeah. Or you just put not doing something on a list.
Yeah, maybe that's what you should do that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about it, because there's something about, you know, that I think we, for me, doing yoga, doing meditation, taking care of myself physically, eating well, eating mindfully, there's something about that that I can extrapolate out total self-indulgent narcissism. Mm. Like, I can look at that and be like, you are such a jerk. Like, what? And that's, like, that's just one of the many voices, you know, like, personality traits of that make someone round, that make me round, that I don't particularly like about myself. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's this, I have a wonderful, there's one of the wonderful yoga instructors at the gym at the Y where I go, and she's like, I want you to think, every, at the beginning of every practice, she's like, I want you to think of someone who needs this to, like, dedicate your energy to. And there's part of me in my head that's like, crack
me.
I know.
Like, it's like, this me. Girl.
But also, like, come on. Like, come on. And that's my, like, mean spiritedness. And if I, like, put that aside and I put all those, like, mm-hmm. chattery voices, that'll be there. Just put those on a shelf.
That's your ego.
It's my ego. It feels so much nicer to not indulge that and mm-hmm. not, like, be critical of everything, and instead enjoy that moment of not doing anything.
Mm-hmm. Or to put your trust in somebody else to tell you what to do. And be like, okay, yoga teacher, you want me to put my feet where?
Right. And that's something so liberating, too. Like, somebody, you do, like, you work alone, so your work, not physically alone, but so much of what you do is self-driven and self-perpetuating. It's like, you've got to be telling yourself what to do all the time. It's so relaxing to have somebody else be like, okay, do this for the next 90 minutes or whatever it mm-hmm. is.
Yes, and exercise yep. and trust, which is hard. It's being vulnerable. It's like allowing them to come into the space where you've built those walls and to say, take a break.
Yep.
Like, trust me, follow me. It's going to be fine. You can do anything for a minute.
Yeah. Yep. I tell myself that a lot. That being said, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to do something meaningful and answer a listener question. We haven't done that in a while, and I have a really good one.
Nice.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association. The Nutritional Therapy Association, NTA, is a vocational nutrition school that develops, trains, and certifies nutritional therapy practitioners and nutritional therapy consultants to understand and reverse the tragic and unsuspected effects of the modern diet on their clients based on their bio-individual nutritional needs. There's no perfect diet for everyone. Their philosophy is that the myriad of health problems that plague modern society result from weakness in the body's physiological foundations as a result of poor nutrition, and that everyone deserves to be healthy. Throughout NTA seminars, students access a wide range of educational tools and techniques that help identify and correct nutritional imbalances from a holistic perspective, emphasizing the importance of properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole foods. Their organization was founded on the teachings of Weston A. Price and the science of Dr. Francis M. Pottinger. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
Welcome back to Sharp and Hot, everyone. Joining me in the studio is Allison Hamlin. Allison, we're going to take a listener question. I have it written down. It came in as an email. What is the difference between cooking with kosher salt versus sea salt versus table salt versus Himalayan salt, etc.?
Ooh.
This is a good, rich question.
This is a great question.
Okay, I'm going to start with table salt. Throw it away. Anything that says table salt on it or iodized table salt has had iodine added to it, which is not, which is fine. It is a relic of a time when people living primarily in cities did not get enough iodine in their diet, which resulted in not growing correctly as a kid and all sorts of, I should know, things like old things, like rickets.
Bad stuff.
Like you'd get rickets or scurvy. Not scurvy, that's the vitamin C one. But the equivalent, the iodine equivalent of not having any iodine.
Where are people eating iodine today? What are they getting their iodine from now?
Vegetables.
Oh, okay.
Vegetables. So if you ate like a kale salad once a month.
If you are cool and live in Brooklyn, you are covered.
You have enough iodine.
Throw that salt away.
Any fortified cereals, fortified bread, things that you're buying at the supermarket, that you're covered. And if you're experiencing any symptoms that your doctor is like, that would send you to the doctor, that would, the doctor would be like, maybe it's an iodine shortage, that would, could take care of itself.
I dated somebody who thought they had rickets once.
What were the symptoms? I'm not sure.
Oh, no, scurvy. You know this person.
I do. Oh, okay. We won't say their name on
air. We won't say this name on air, but...
Why did they think they had... I mean, like, literally squeeze a lemon, half a lemon in your water once a week. Oh! I just got a whisper. Yes, this person was, like, allergic. Like, he would brag to me about how he knew what fast food restaurants were between his home and his Subway stop at work, and that... like with pride would tell me that those were the places that he ate. And yeah, this is not a part. I mean, he is a peer, but this is a person with like a real time job and like a grown up set of responsibilities. And I would look at him like, what do your insides look like? Like all I could think of was, cause he's slender and he's genuinely, I mean, he's a handsome guy. You like look from the outside, but did you have the poster in your health class when you were in high school of like, it was a woman's face that was like decaying and it said, if smoking did to the outside of your body what it does to the inside, would you still smoke? And I saw that poster every day and I still smoked for 15 years. So it wasn't a very effective ad campaign, but that's what I used to think about him. I almost just said his name. They like, dude, you are going to, if they autopsy you, you're going to look like emphysema face lady on the inside. So anyway,
we digress.
Okay, so table salt is like the white shaker at the diner. It's the white shaker on picnic tables. It's not going to hurt you. It's fine. But if you're spending money on salt, you don't need the iodine and you have lots of other good things to choose from. So kosher salt is in the big red box or the big blue box. Diamond crystal is the choice of most chefs. It's the red and white box. It has a particular feel between your fingers that I love. I find it very comforting. I know exactly how much to rub between my fingers for any application. And it's super, super tactile.
It's a flat grain.
Mm-hmm. It's a flat grain. It itself is not kosher certified, but it's used in the kosher processing of meat.
For koshering meat.
As a
verb.
Correct.
Okay.
Not itself is not necessarily kosher. Kosher salt, super inexpensive, comes in large quantities. You use it to salt water for boiling pasta. Any salting application, it's perfectly fine. It has a completely neutral flavor, which is the other thing I'll say about iodized salt I think in a blind test, I would probably be proven wrong, but I would say iodized salt has a particular flavor to it.
It tastes like a little iron.
Yeah, like, you get it like tastes a metallic.
Kind of like when you bite your cheek and you're like bleeding in your mouth a little bit, but it's salty. But that's...
Kosher salt doesn't have that because it's pure. There's literally no additives. Sea salt is sort of the next step up in the expensive... I mean, for as expensive as salt can be, which is not really all that expensive. Sea salt comes from the ocean and it has been evaporated. Well, this is going to come. I know. Show me.
You said the word. I'm already wistful.
So the salt has been, the water has been distilled off, leaving behind the salt, and you can get it in any size crystal from super, super fine powder all the way up to chunks that, you know, sometimes restaurants set oyster shells on if you order a plate of oysters. It's much more expensive than kosher salt, so you wouldn't, it would be wasteful, I think, to use it to salt water for pasta because you're just going to throw it away ultimately in the draining of the water. But for things like omelets and salads, and it's fun to play around with. They all have their own personalities. Some of them are red, some of them are black. Red salts are red because of a particular algae. Red sea salts, I should say, are red because of a particular algae. When the water, when the ocean water was distilled off, the algae stayed behind. Black sea salt is not naturally black. Charcoal is added to it.
That's so sad.
So nothing, it, but yeah, it, when I learned that, I was like, oh, I thought there was like a real thing is black salt. That is mimicked by the addition of charcoal. So good for like, I love putting it on top of deviled eggs, like a little black sea salt crumbles, or if you're serving like caviar, something like flying fish roe that's orange, black sea salt can provide a nice color and textural component, but it's not worth seeking out if you're just going to dump it in pasta water.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about like the grain here. I guess I'm a little like grain obsessed. So like sel de mer is kind of like a flat sort mm-hmm. of like snowflakey crystal. Mm-hmm. But then I think about Malden, which is a pyramidal shape. You know, is there a difference? Is it just what I like? Is there, you know, like, why
so
is that?
So it happens in the process of making the salt. So sel de mer, when they dry the salt, it actually like flakes up like fish scales, like dried fish scales or like bonito flake on the top of these screens.
I'm just so hungry.
Like, I just want, and when you and I worked together, we used to have containers of Malden, which is a British sea salt that we would just eat straight out of the blue and green, or the green and white box.
Yeah, there's, I mean, they come in tubs too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So that was the best. That was the best time of my life.
I cannot, for home cooks who are listening, I cannot highly recommend going on Amazon or your local gourmet shop and getting yourself a box of Malden sea salt. No, it will change your life. So good. Little pyramid shape. I was actually thinking about getting a little tattoo of a Malden pyramid, but I thought, I don't know how you would, after a lot of research into the Google images, I was like, I don't think that would come across cool as cool as I think it would. So then Himalayan salt is not created by the ocean at all. Himalayan salt is from the power of the plate tectonics of the earth moving together, and it's harvested out of underneath the Himalayan mountains.
So it's like yoga salt.
It was never oceanic salt. Well, that's not true. Back when all of the earth was
Pangaea,
then, but no, I don't think that's actually true. I think it was always formed in the pressure of the earth. I don't think it was ever oceanic salt. I think the salt, I think the ocean, I have to double check this.
Okay.
I'm
curious.
Positive.
I want to know the answer.
You'd think I would have had the answer before I went down this path.
It's okay. We're all on a journey.
I'm almost certain that the ocean is salty because of the Himalayan sea salt, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
But you can buy it in big blocks, and they were super rare. Mark bought me one years and years and years ago before I had any idea. Now you can get them at Target.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put them in your oven and get them really hot, they'll hold heat, and then it's a fun dinner party trick because you can skewer shrimp, and like people can hibachi their own shrimp right on top of the salt block.
Talking my language.
You can also put it in the freezer and get it cold, so you can make sashimi platters or cheese plates or, you know, whatever it is that you want if you want to keep things cold. But I just think fascinating. It's not oceanic salt. So the one that I have has like, you can see the saw mark, like where it was cut on a circular saw. And the problem with it that I have not rectified is that I have it sitting, once you start to get it hot, it will turn black. And it's beautiful just the way it is. It's like this lovely transparent or translucent pink, and you can see all of the like striations in it. So I didn't want to use it because I didn't want to ruin all of that beauty. So it's just been sitting on our windowsill. But the problem is that the salt has migrated, and our whole like windowsill is like a crystal farm now.
Oh, wow.
Which is not awesome in an 18th century
house. Does it hold the moisture? Does it get sweaty?
The salt gets sweaty, mm-hmm. and then it, like, walks away.
Yeah.
And, like, up the window.
So, on my yoga retreat, mm-hmm. we all got these little salt rocks and a little message and a candle, and we sat in a big circle, and we
You're
read our quote.
I love it.
I know. You wouldn't think it, but I am at heart. And so we read our quote, and we had our rocks, which are salt. I mean, it's just like what you're saying. It was a salt rock.
Was it pink?
It was white.
Okay.
But we brought them, because we were on the beach, and we brought them back to our room, and I had mine in the little, like, burlap sack with my paper, and because the beach was wet, the rock absorbed all the wetness and then bled it out onto my quote, and then my quote ran. But
I don't think that's even why. I think the physics of it is the salt's actually pulling moisture out of the air to it. It wasn't carrying moisture from the beach back to your...
That was so romantic.
It's why, water. Like, so if you, if you've ever had the privilege of visiting someone's beach house, some people, Uncle Paul, are neurotic about you not sitting down on a chair with a wet bathing suit. And for really good reason, because if you get salt into, like, the foam of a chair, forever, it will always be wet. Forever and ever, because the salt that you leave behind from your wet bathing suit, your tush, will pull the moisture out of the air.
Wow.
I know.
Is that the koshering process, though?
We've koshered the chair.
The chair is kosher now, ladies and gentlemen.
Okay, so in a nutshell, kosher salt, super inexpensive. That's what you use for your everyday cooking applications. Sea salt, Himalayan salt, you can use as, think of as finishing salts. You can use them to, like, put on deviled eggs, put on top of salads, things where you want to know that the salt is there, either for a textural component or a color component. Iodized salt, table salt, leave it behind.
Got it.
Okay.
All right.
If you have questions, you can reach me, Chef Emily, at sharpenhot.com. I am at Chef Emily P on Twitter and Instagram. You can go to Facebook.com/sharpenhot. There's so much social media to be done. I have not been very active on the Facebook page. Instagram and Twitter, though, that's where I'm at. And hashtag sharp and hot on your Instagram pictures, and I will send you a book. I'm really far behind. That's so on top of it. Anyone who's listening, know that I have you. I've got you. I've got the books. I just have to get myself to the post office is really what it's about.
Amazing. Well, I also, because shameless plug, big shout out to Sync Studio. If you guys are in the market for a new place to get your yoga or your spin or your circuit on, I love them. They're in Williamsburg on South 2nd. And big shout out to Gitana Del Mar. It means Gypsy of the Sea.
Can anyone just go there, or do you have to go as part of
if you go, just Google them. So Gitana, GitanaDelMar. And they're in Santa Marta. It's about an hour out of the airport. But it's amazing. The owners, Nina and Ryan, were just incredible. It's paradise. It's just actually paradise. And they have two dogs, Milu and Mia, which does prove that all good dogs do go to heaven.
Aww. So
anyway, if you want this bliss, I would send you there.
I'm looking at the website right now. That looks amazing. Amazing. Allison, thank you for being on the show. Dave, thank you for being the engineer. The theme song is Nice Peter, my friend Peter Shukoff. Everybody, thank you so much for listening and giving me a half hour of your time. Until next week, keep playing with fire and knives.
Sharp and hot with Chef Emily. Sharp and hot with Chef Emily.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.